era of national disruption. Rather, he is its most manifest consequence. In presidential politics, the candidate must meet the moment. Barack Obama could not have won the White House with his dovish foreign policy platform in 2004, an election decided on the question of whom Americans wanted as their wartime president. It was not until 2008, with the country weary from intervention and his heavily favored Democratic rival tainted with a vote for the Iraq invasion, that the electorate was primed for his candidacy. Similarly, Trump's appeals to America's darker impulses would have fallen flat in 2000. The nation was too peaceful, too prosperous, too cohesive. All throughout history, the world over, efforts to exploit anxiety have succeeded when there is anxiety to be found, times of war, financial despair, national disunity. The United States, circa 2000, did not fit the bill. Even after winning the most disputed race in presidential history, with a grueling 36-day Florida recount splintering the nation before the Supreme Court intervened on his behalf, George W. Bush entered office with a 57% approval rating, higher than the incoming marks of both his father, George H.W. Bush, and the previous Republican president, Ronald Reagan. 8 years later, the scenery had changed. The country was trapped in two deeply unpopular military conflicts. It was shedding jobs at an alarming rate, particularly in the manufacturing hubs of Middle America. And its electorate was increasingly bifurcated, with partisans estranged from one another, not just ideologically, but geographically and culturally as well. Into this breach stepped Obama. He promised to heal these wounds, to reject the labels of red states and blue states, and unify the country. It would prove an impossible task. To understand Trumpism is to understand the dramatic national makeover of the previous 10 years. When Obama was sworn in as president in January 2009, he opposed same-sex marriage. Facebook lagged behind MySpace in monthly web traffic. Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were the most famous couple on Earth. Airbnb had just launched its website. Tiger Woods was the world's most dominant athlete. Uber did not exist. Nobody had heard of the word gluten. The Twitter account, @RealDonaldTrump, had not yet been created. The ensuing decade saw a convergence of phenomena. Economic displacement, technological innovation, civic upheaval that fundamentally reshaped our politics. And nowhere was that change felt more acutely than inside the Republican Party. Having moved to Washington in the twilight of Bush's presidency, I found myself less fascinated by Obama and his incoming Democratic government than by the power vacuum in the GOP. Bush was leaving office with record low approval, and Republicans were headed into the wilderness. There was no vision, no new generation of leaders, no energy in the conservative base. One of America's two major parties had gone politically bankrupt. In the 10 years since, covering Congress and campaigns, I have interviewed more than a dozen Republican presidential candidates, scores of GOP congressmen and senators and governors, hundreds of party activists and strategists, and countless voters all across the country. I watched as the Republican Congress went to war with Obama, as the Tea Party rebranded the American right, as platoons of insurgent lawmakers came to Washington intent on its demolition, as the government was shuttered and pushed to the brink of default, as a group of renegades established themselves as an effective veto threat over their own party, and as the mutiny overthrew the most powerful man in the GOP, having already swallowed up his heir apparent. A wave of revolution was cresting in the Republican Party. The only question was who would ride it. The narrative I am setting forth in these pages is not meant to be comprehensive. What I have attempted to construct is an account guided by my own